following is a presentation of Crane's Chicago Business, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Radio.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist. Today, a look at why commercial tenants and investments are flocking to the southwest corner of the Loop, and a conversation about executive compensation practices. That's all coming up today after these top stories. Chicago area home values grew in April at a level that hasn't been lower since the fall of 2015. Single-family home values were up less than 2% last month from the same month last year, according to data released this morning. The last time shallower growth was reported in Chicago was October 2015, when prices were up just 1.2% from the same month a year earlier. Since January, local home prices have grown by less year over year than they did the month before. The string of shrinking figures follows a 10-month stretch when Chicago area growth stayed steady at about 3%. And Chicago's home prices are rising at about half the rate of the nation's. April home prices nationally were up 3.7% last month from a year earlier, according to the data. That figure, too, has been shrinking. In April 2018, the nation's home prices were up 6.3% from a year before. The four cities that had weaker April price growth than Chicago are West Coast cities, where previously overheated markets have cooled dramatically. Those cities are Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, and Seattle. Lonnie G. Bunch III, the founding director of the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, has been appointed secretary of the Smithsonian Institution, becoming the first African American leader in its 173-year history. Considered a giant in the museum field, Bunch becomes the 14th secretary of the institution, responsible for its $1.5 billion annual budget that supports 19 museums, 9 research centers, and the National Zoo. He's the first Smithsonian director to ascend to the secretary's post in 74 years and starts his new role June 16th. Coming up, a conversation with Crane's Chicago Business senior reporter Joe Cahill about executive compensation practices. That conversation after a quick word from our sponsor. A Chicago-based institution, Wintrust Commercial Banking provides area businesses with local decision-making and a personalized focus. With specialty services for specific industries and tools like treasury management, commercial lending, and wealth services, the dedicated team will support you and your business through every need. Wintrust Commercial Banking was built here in Chicago to serve Chicago businesses. Learn more about how they can help you achieve your business goals at wintrust.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. We're joined now by Crane's Chicago Business columnist, Joe Cahill, to talk about recent conversation around executive compensation. Joe, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Amy.
So talk us through this. Late last week, you had a piece about executive compensation and how the practice of creating and arriving at a salary point sometimes doesn't sit so well with shareholders, but also employees. I think that's always been a kind of contentious point, but it seems like it's kind of reaching this new level in the broader conversation.
The example that I wrote about last week was at Mondelez International, the big snack-making company, makes Oreos and Ritz crackers and things like that. For the second year in a row, shareholders registered very high levels of dissatisfaction with the executive pay there. Only 56% of the shares that were voted in an advisory referendum on the pay package voted in favor of the pay program for senior executives at the company. And while that is an improvement over last year when a majority voted against the pay package, it's still a very low level of support. Companies usually like to get 80 or really even above 90% approval in these referendums, which are not binding, but they serve as a very strong indication of how shareholders who own the company feel about the pay being given to executives who work for them.
That being said, there's been a lot of conversation around executive pay in other sectors too, most recently hospital CEOs. I know Cranes has taken a look at that, as some other outlets have as well. But in this particular case with this particular company, is it mostly centering around how that number is, how we arrive at that number? Or is it about the ratio of worker pay versus the leadership pay? Or is it kind of a combination of things?
Well, it is a combination. I think in the case of Mondelez, a lot of it is rooted in what was paid out to their CEO for 2017, and that was the pay package that was part of the executive pay package that was actually failed to get a majority of the vote in 2018. 15 say-on-pay referendum, and that's almost unheard of for a say-on-pay referendum to fail to show a majority in favor of the pay package. The CEO in question there, Dirk Vandeput, had joined the company in late 2017, and he was given $42 million for that year. $38 million of that was what they called make-whole compensation for pay that he supposedly forfeited by leaving his previous employer. In other words, if he had stuck around there, he would have made all this money. And that was a real problem for a lot of the Mondelez shareholders, understandably, because they basically wound up paying him for work that he did on behalf of another company. And Mondelez really didn't do anything to correct that award, you know, to change that award from 2017 in the following year. So that would partially explain this year's low level of support. But I think it also, you know, reflects general dissatisfaction with the level of pay that, you know, that the executives are getting there.
Earlier this month, you wrote about, you looked at six CEOs of local companies and their compensation. And as you have written so much about this and thought about it and done so much reporting in this area, what has been most surprising to you in that conversation when we talk about executive pay?
Well, what has always stood out to me the most about pay for senior executives is that it's on this sort of self-escalating track whereby companies continually strive to pay their CEO as much or more as the median. And, you know, they kind of become like the children of Lake Wobegon. You know, every CEO is exceptional. But, you know, that can't be the case. They're all not exceptional, but they continue to be paid as if they are. And a lot of that is rooted in a theory that has really been disproven by research, which is that CEOs are constantly bombarded with offers to go elsewhere. And if you don't pay your CEO as much as the CEO down the street is making, then you're going to lose your CEO. Research has shown that that's not the case. Most CEOs are running pretty much the only company they're qualified to run. So there's flawed thinking at the root of the executive comp philosophies at most companies these days.
And I think that part, it gets so fascinating, right? And I think that's what often gets people, those of us who are not CEOs anyway, you know, in the average person having a conversation about leadership of a company, that tends to be where tensions really start to arise and things start to get really locked up, is this idea of exactly what you're speaking to, this kind of exceptionalism of CEOs and this feeling of how we talk about CEO compensation and all that. So my question then is anybody trying to shift that conversation? As you said, research has debunked this longstanding idea. So is anybody moving in a different direction, or do you see anywhere in the market that perhaps there's budging or a shift another direction?
Well, there are companies who take a different approach. There was a story in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago about the CEO of American Airlines who gets a base salary of, I'm just trying to work from memory here, but I believe it was around $1.2 million, and then the rest of his pay is in stock, so he's not getting the huge cash awards, and, you know, therefore his compensation is really tied much more directly to the performance of the stock. So that's one example, but there certainly isn't a groundswell of movement anywhere among companies to fundamentally rethink the level of CEO pay. I mean, they're constantly tinkering with the components. They're constantly making changes that enable them to describe their pay as more performance-based. But they all start from such a high baseline that it's really hard to accept that kind of characterization when, you know, somebody gets in a bad year, they get $12 million, and in a good year, they get $18 million. You know, the link to performance seems pretty weak there.
Yeah. The editorial piece that is up at Crane Chicago Business, it went up late last week, that calls for reading the tea leaves on executive compensation. And that's kind of making the case that it's smart for C-suite executives to make some changes now rather than wait around for regulatory, requirements to happen when the economy inevitably, starts to take a turn or to go down. And when we think about that one, that starts to open up this idea. It's almost a call for a groundswell.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's certainly a populist dimension to this issue, and if it starts to climb higher on the priority lists of people who are concerned about these sorts of things, and control of legislatures shifts to parties that are interested in taking a little more active role in stage managing the operations of private companies. You could certainly see movement on pay. I mean, you're already seeing people call for regulations about the composition of boards of directors, and with pay being such a hot button issue, you could certainly envision a scenario where they turn to that as well.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Amy.
Continuing today's top headlines, according to applications filed with the state, Amita Health is discontinuing certain service lines at three former Prentice Health hospitals due to low utilization. Amita Health St. Joseph Hospital in Lakeview plans to cut physical rehabilitation services as admissions decreased 40% last year, according to an application filed earlier this month with the Illinois Health Facilities and Services Review Board, which decides the fate of healthcare projects within the state. The discontinuation is not expected to affect access to rehabilitation, as 14 other hospitals in the region provide such services, including two former Prentice hospitals. Meanwhile, the health system is also discontinuing open heart surgery programs at Amita Health St. Francis Hospital in Evanston and Amita Health St. Mary of Nazareth Hospital. The application also states there's no cost associated with the project, and all staff have accepted positions elsewhere within the Amita Health system. The University of Chicago is creating its first new school in 31 years, adding the Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering with $75 million in new funding from the Pritzker Foundation. The university, which has not had an engineering school until just now, said the school will be the first of its kind in the U.S., taking an interdisciplinary approach to the engineering field with a focus on research and developments, starting at one of the smallest levels of science, the molecule. It'll become the seventh in the university schools, which also includes the Booth School of Business and the Pritzker School of Medicine. The new school will grow out of the university's Institute for Molecular Engineering and continue the school's ties with Argonne National Laboratory. It'll offer undergraduate, graduate, and doctorate degrees with research in quantum engineering, biotech, immunoengineering, advanced materials, energy storage, and clean water, among other things. It'll also work with the school's Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation, with an eye to, quote, rapidly commercialize technologies, according to a statement. The university's scientists and engineers in the field have already launched six companies, it said. The statement also said that rather than focusing on traditional engineering specialties, the Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering is organized around pressing social challenges. The new school will focus on science, engineering, and tech development efforts that take a molecular level-up approach to addressing major social issues like questions related to clean water and energy storage. Coming up, a flurry of new tenants and hefty investments are kind of having a moment in the southwest corner of the Loop. More on that story after this word from our sponsor. Wintrust Commercial Banking offers a full suite of financial resources designed to meet the needs of middle market businesses and larger companies. With comprehensive and personalized financial solutions coupled with bankers who get to know your industry's demands, Wintrust Commercial Banking is committed to providing the tools to help your business reach its strategic growth initiatives. You've got a vision for your business, and Wintrust Commercial Banking is here to help you see it through. Find out more at wintrust.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. A few blocks away from the site where the 1871 blaze that defined Chicago history began, a hot new streak is shaping part of the city's future. The southwest corner of the Loop, long unproven a spot for office users, is suddenly on fire in an entirely different way. With more than $2 billion pouring into redevelopment projects at Willis Tower, the old main post office, and Union Station, companies over the past 7 months have inked more than 1 million square feet of new leases in mostly vacant and planned buildings near the south south branch of the Chicago River. And the area between the city's tallest skyscraper and the Jane Byrne Interchange is still gaining traction as Uber and Federal Home Loan Bank of Chicago are eyeing what could be another nearly 600,000 square feet of offices at the post office, which is being turned into a modern office building. The flock of new tenants and hefty investments are anchoring a breakout moment in a pocket of downtown that's labored to establish itself as a corporate destination, while companies have gone elsewhere in the Loop, West Loop, River North, and Fulton Market District. Thousands of employees over the next few years will descend on the corridor, too, spurred by developer 601W's $900 million post office overhaul, a 300,000-square-foot retail addition coming to the base of Willis Tower, and Riverside Investment and Development's planned renovation of the Union Station head house, with a new 50-story tower next door anchored by BMO Harris Bank's massive Chicago office. On top of all that, developer-related Midwest's $7 billion vision for the 78 could eventually transform 62 acres of vacant riverfront land, a few blocks south into 13 million square feet of properties. More on that story at chicagobusiness.com. I'm Amy Guth, and until tomorrow, that's all for Crane's Daily Gist. Thank you to producer Haima Black. Find analysis, breaking business news data, and lots more at chicagobusiness.com. And find me on Twitter as @AmyGuth, and let's continue the conversation with #Crane's Daily Gist. We'll see you tomorrow.